welcome to Close Up with Paul McNeil. This is the inaugural interview for Close Up, a television program that we're partnering with Longmeadow Community Television and Longmeadow Public Schools to bring to you in the community of Longmeadow. And here on Close Up, I'm the program coordinator for the Close Community Coalition, which works on youth substance use prevention. And I'm going to try to bring in wonderful leaders in the community that do their darndest to make Longmeadow a really healthy place for young people to grow up. And my first guest today, I'm so excited to have Nilda Irizarry. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yes, Irizarry.
Okay. Irizarry, okay. Nilda Irizarry is incredible, and she's new to the district in the last year. And I would love to welcome Nilda to the Close Up, our first show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. I have the largest cue cards on the planet to start with. Maybe by the next episode I'll shrink everything down and then it'll be nice and tight. But today it's going to be a real mess. Nilda, who are you and what do you do? Like, what's your role in the district?
Thank you for having me. I'm Nilda Irizarry. I'm the Director of Student and Family Support. So underneath that role is a whole host of responsibilities. So I am the Social Emotional Learning Coordinator, the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Coordinator, the K-12 Health and Wellness Coordinator, and I help plan the district level professional development. I'm also the Nursing Supervisor and Coordinator. So it's a little bit of everything, but the crux of it is supporting our students and families with whatever they need.
That's a lot.
It feels like a lot.
That's a lot of stuff. You've been here since, was it August? No, July.
July 1st.
You started in July. You did not grow up in Longmeadow, but now you've worked in Longmeadow every day since July.
Yes.
What are you seeing in town that you're most proud of so far?
I love the level of connectedness in the community. One of my first days on the job, I had walked to Blueberry Hill Elementary, and I saw all of the families talking to each other as they're dropping their children off at school, and it just seemed to me like a neighborhood feel. Like they had known each other, their kids know each other, and they're developing these strong connections as families, and it felt like a very small town connected feel. That was also seen when we had our open houses and our back to school nights. Parents were so excited to see each other and connect. Then the other layer that I've really enjoyed watching is the Longmeadow Public School students. I think we have the best and the brightest students. They're well-rounded, they're great academically, they're great socially, they're just kind people. So I think the Longmeadow community should be very proud of the way that their children conduct themselves at school. I've seen elementary classrooms, middle school classrooms. I'm making my way up to the high school to observe some of the instruction there. But I am always in awe of what our students are doing.
Yeah, I work pretty closely with the Students Together Against Negative Decisions Club at the high school, who works on a lot of really wonderful pro-social projects for their peers. And they're so awesome. And they're just the awesomest kids. And then I'll work with the Glenbrook and Williams. We'll both have these peer leader groups, and they'll help us develop certain messaging and marketing materials for their peers around healthy behaviors that most students are exhibiting around substance use and other things. And they're just the awesomest kids. So I also think that I'm proud of them too.
Yeah. So
what do you think is working? What do you think is working well to keep Longmeadow's youth healthy and safe?
I do think that physical well-being is something that's strong in Longmeadow. We have a strong athletic program. Our PE health and wellness department, they're constantly thinking about ways to keep kids moving. Our health courses talk about nutrition, making good choices. I observed Alex Baker's nutrition lesson. Students had to take on a nutrition lens. So they were a nutritionist planning for someone who might be diabetic or planning for someone who might need a gluten-free diet. So the students were collaborating together, creating their own menus, and then presenting what they would as nutritionists recommend for their client. And I thought that was a really innovative way to introduce nutrition to students, helping them see it from the lens of a nutritionist, which is a viable, you know, career for students.
I was going to say, they could pair up with Health New England and offer coverage for, I mean, the $20 copays. Yeah. That's because nutritionists are hard to find. That's so cool.
Yeah, and we really do have an elite athletics team.
Yeah.
We offer so many things, so many different sports, and I really love our athletic director, Mike Capitasco.
Everyone calls him Cap. Yeah, Mike Capitasco.
Coach Cap. I think he strives for like the whole athlete, someone who's great academically, someone who's great socially. They're leaders in the community, and they play well on the field.
Yeah, they very high achieving on the field and in the classroom. And Mike Capitasco has done a great job working with the team captains. As far as I'm concerned, he'll invite me in to work with the team captains a couple times a season, just to talk about how important it is to model really healthy behavior and committing to a substance-free season, which I think is cool. I think some athletic directors don't address that head-on, but he's been very direct about how much a chemical might impact athletic performance and how a team will do better if they commit to a substance-free season, which I'm always appreciative of in my role. But awesome student athletes, and always trying to find like the next new sport too to introduce to the district, which I think is really, really fun. What's not working? There's a lot working.
Yeah, there's a lot that's working, but I have to go with the national trends on mental health. I think we're, you know, part of your surveys, you've seen the data. Our students at the high school are reporting higher degrees of stress and anxiety. Most of it is related to academics. Some of it's related to social pressures and social demands. But we need to be doing more to address the mental health needs of teenagers in our community, spotting the signs that someone is struggling or internalizing their emotions and not being able to connect with an adult and express how they're feeling. Suicidality is something that every citizen in Longmeadow should be concerned about. You know, who are our students that are most at risk, and how can we find the red flags and support them long term, not just for this moment, but what are some healthy mental health habits long term? What are some things that we could do proactively to prevent someone from feeling like they're falling apart? So I think mental health supports, we have great school adjustment counselors, we have great counselors, but you know, we don't have enough.
And I'm thinking, I mean, COVID didn't help that at all. And the social, emotional, and mental health risk factors in town, I'm wondering if you could say anything about the new social, emotional learning curriculum that the district's committed to, and you've really helped usher into the district, and sort of what RULER is, and will it help younger people develop some of these skills that will help them longer term?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I first came to this district, I was excited about some of the SEL practices, but then I noticed there was no cohesive approach. Yeah. Every school had their own social-emotional learning approach. So part of the work I'm doing is we organized an SEL implementation team. It has representatives from every school in the district. We've been Yale RULER trained, so we went to Yale New Haven, and they have an entire school devoted to social-emotional intelligence. We learned from professors about brain science and why regulating your emotions makes you more susceptible to learning, taking intellectual risks in the classroom. Part of the work of this team is to sort of train other teachers across the district, teach them strategies to promote social emotional learning in their classrooms. But we have just started that work. We're going to unroll it on the two middle schools next year. What the work entails is teaching students how to identify their emotions, label their emotions in the moment, and if their emotion doesn't match with their intended goal, how do you regulate your emotions in the moment? So sometimes it's teaching students to take a break, take five breaths before you respond, reflect, have a reflective journal where you sort of air out the things that are upsetting you if you can't communicate in that moment. There's a whole host of strategies to help students grapple with their emotions, but it needs to be a K-12 developmentally appropriate scope and sequence where the adults around the students are acknowledging how they're feeling and teaching them how to pivot when necessary.
And after you're done with these kids? Maybe inviting every millennial on the planet to help them develop emotional awareness?
I feel every single person needs to develop their
everything you were just saying. I was like, okay, what should I do? Okay, I'll take five
and
seconds.
And it's great. I think you're right. It's great for every individual to say, you know, I struggle with social awareness in some settings. I struggle in large groups, or I'm better in small groups. Knowing who you are social emotionally will help you develop the right goals for yourself.
That's so rad. The work that I do, I try to do way upstream public health and substance prevention work. And what that means is like an elementary kid who can self-soothe and manage their own stress, which, you know, they have confidence, they're secure, they can help their peers when their peers are struggling with stuff. And so I just really value all the work you've committed to implementing RULER. I think it's going to, what does RULER stand for?
Recognizing emotions, understanding emotions, labeling emotions, expressing emotions, regulating emotions.
Nice. You did it.
Yeah.
And if you got it wrong, I wouldn't know.
No, they're right.
Let's do a fact check. Can we get a fact check, Doug? I think it's just so pivotal. And it's a big deal that the school district has committed to one sort of one road to take together. I think it's awesome. There's, you know, many roads to take to great social emotional outcomes, but it's hard to track. You know, I look at the bigger aggregated data of the school district that we collect in the school climate survey every year, and we ask them, did you go to Blueberry Center or Wolf Swamp? And it's, I could, you know, parse out which schools had like the better social emotional outcomes, but I can't say there's causation, right? But I think it's so much more important to say we're all trying the same wonderful evidence-based curriculum, and here are our outcomes, as opposed to like, here's their outcomes. So I think it's big.
And part of, you know, I have gotten community questions, like how are you going to measure if this SEL program is effective? Right now we're looking at Panorama. They offer student-facing surveys where students rate themselves like, I can identify my emotions. If I'm upset, I know how to resolve a conflict. And they would measure and track their progress on these SEL outcomes. So it's better if the student is self-identifying what they need to work on and the adults sort of guide and support them.
Well, you're doing awesome work.
I really, so are you.
Well, thank you. This isn't about me. Anything else you want to say about me? Nilda, I kind of want to talk about you a little more now, like you as a person. And I just think parenting is so important everywhere. And so we serve the town of Longmeadow, and so I'm curious. You grew up in Springfield.
I did.
I'm curious, and I grew up in Central Mass. And we've talked a lot about who you are and who I am, where we come from, just in our personal lives in the past. But I would love for you to share, you know, who helped raise you, and how did they do, and how did it go? Because parenting is so impossibly hard.
Yeah.
And so, what worked, what didn't work, is what I'm always thinking about with my parenting. And so. Yeah, who helped raise you? How'd it go?
So I grew up in Springfield, Mass, and I grew up in the 90s. It was in the middle of a rise of drug use. And at that time, there was like the Just Say No or the DARE campaign, which in a lot of ways in my community, I didn't see the benefits. Yeah. I did see a lot of substance abuse, poverty. And I love Springfield. I still live there. So I'm talking from a place of experience and knowing. So I grew up on Pine Street Court, which is near the High School of Commerce. And it was a very rough environment, but I really loved school and I wanted to excel as best I could. I earned a full tuition scholarship to Springfield College, and that created the pathway that educational access allows for so much increased opportunity. But the people that raised me, my mom and dad in our home, they had great values. They constantly brought us to libraries. We didn't have a lot of money, but they learned how to access resources that were free. So we would go to the public library in Springfield, and we would spend hours there. My mom's like, you can't leave till you read 3 books.
Oh, cool.
And I would sit there reading because she knew that education can open doors and transform lives. I didn't know that then why she was doing this, but now I do. So both my parents were working parents, and advocates of education.
And can I ask, when you hit like high school, middle or high school, can you reflect on what stressed you out then? Because I think we're always working with, you know, what are the stressors in the middle and high school age kids that we work with? What are the stressors in their lives? Like, what stressed you out in high school?
Now looking back on it, I'm so happy that we didn't have social media where students
thank God
where students are broadcasting whether or not they were invited to a party, whether or not they went to a social event, whether or not they went on a vacation. I didn't know I was growing up in a poor environment because I had no one else to compare it to. We were all just in our own environment. So none of us went on vacations. None of us were expressing what we were doing on weekends to the rest of the community. So I was obviously a bookworm. I was always reading and I was always by myself. My mom always wanted me home. So when I think of the pressures that students experience now, that every behavior is on a social platform, I do worry about it. Then I didn't know that I was not invited to birthday parties, that I didn't have the typical teenage weekend. So most of my stressors from school came from me wanting to learn and achieve, and really thinking about, you know, how can I be my best self at school, even though my environmental stressors were making me feel stressed. Mm-hmm. Like, my environment was stressing me out. When I went to school, that was almost like my safety zone.
Yeah.
And I was a former middle school principal, and I've seen that a lot, where students go into school and that is their safe place. And then when they're approaching the weekend or a long vacation, that's when the behaviors start to exacerbate and teachers are wondering, well, why? Well, they might be nervous about, you know, going home for a long extended break when school is their safe place.
Yeah, I think from what I see in the students in this school district too, you've done a great job helping make this environment such a nice, peaceful, safe haven for kids. I see kids eating lunch, I see kids going between classes, and people seem comfortable here for the most part. And I think that's so important, you're right, because you never know what people's life is like at home.
Mm-hmm.
How did you manage your stress when you were young?
So for me, I was always journaling. I still do that now. Today I spend about 5 minutes at the end of the day reflecting on moments that I didn't really feel like I processed. Mm-hmm. So if I was in a meeting and I didn't get a chance to speak, I might write that down. Like, go back to that conversation, really express yourself, be an upstander, do those things. So the end of the day always became a time to process. So journaling was one way I managed stress. The other piece is reading. Reading to me provided an escape and let me know what other worlds exist. And that was entertainment and enjoyable for me. Relationships with my sisters. I was very close with my second to the oldest sister. We were partners in everything, and I would share with her a lot of the things that I was experiencing and thinking. And then I relied on my educators to be positive mentors and support to me.
I'll talk to you about that next. I guess the next question is around managing stress in some way, but what was your natural high? Like, what was the thing? It sounds like journaling really helped. I don't know if there was any sports or physical activity that would help too, but like, what was the thing you would do to naturally stimulate dopamine, serotonin, all those good feeling chemicals in your brain?
I would have to say nature, and it still is. So even though I grew up in Springfield, my parents would take road trips with us, and I remember the first time I went to Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
And you're like,
it's a lot of water.
I know. You just feel like the world is so much bigger than what you've seen and known. And still today, when I go see something new, I've been to Hawaii and I've seen volcanoes. And I'm like, the world is still so big and I'm so small. Yeah. That excitement, that wonder, that awe for nature still is my natural high.
That's awesome. And I want to talk about, you had mentioned influential teachers in your life and people at school. And so my next question is around motivation. Like, who motivated you? Who's someone that had a profound impact on your life? It could be a parent, but I'm really curious about, like, sort of the school or community domain. Like, who had that really positive, lasting impact on you? And so, made it impactful?
There's a lot of research about what teachers say to students. So whatever a teacher says to a student is likely to believe it. So speaking life into a child, having positive statements, telling them that they are leaders, that they are smart, you tell someone those statements long enough, they're going to start to believe it. So I had two teachers, Mr. Gingras and Mrs. Gardner, both English teachers. So both of them said, you know, you could be an English teacher, you could be a leader, you're so smart, you're so bright, like I see you becoming something great. And I kept thinking, really, me? So all of those statements, students notice what you say about them and to them. And my senior year, I became a tutor, so I was helping students learn how to read. It was the first time I met an illiterate teenager, and I had to tutor her on the basics. So I used phonics, whole language, used a blended approach. We would read magazines together. We'd have 17 out, and we would start like going through it. And then once I saw the spark of reading ignite in her, I'm like, why wouldn't I do this for the rest of my life? Work with kids, yeah. Teach them how to read, teach them how to learn, expose them to like great new experiences, and then always express that belief that, you know, students can do great things.
And you read a lot, it sounds like, when you were growing up. Mm-hmm. What's a book? I guess it doesn't have to be a book from when you were a teenager, but what's a book? What's a book now that you just absolutely love and the world needs to know about?
I know people think that it's a dark text, and the movie is pretty somber because it was just redone. But The Color Purple, even before Oprah, I guess, redid it.
She did.
even before that movie, that was one of the first books that I read, and I just thought... Celie is sort of dealing with so much in her environment, but she's still able to rise above it and stay strong. Her level of resilience is there, and the same with the character Sophia. Like, they try to take everything from her, and still at the end, she is able to preserve and retain who she is. I just thought that story is so empowering. And then I love Alice Walker. I've seen her speak, and that just moved me, that a text can withstand the test of time and can teach you about resilience and power.
And multiple iterations in media.
I know.
Because is it right now there's a new Color Purple?
Yes. Okay. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Neither have I. Let's go see it. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about it. My next two questions were around. So I wanted to know what you've read that we need to read. What have you watched? Or what have you listened to, if there's like a podcast out there? What does the world need to know that you're excited about or fired up about? What have you watched?
Okay, so this, I'm going to be honest. And this is part of the social awareness.
Yeah.
So I don't watch a lot of television.
Okay. Movies?
Yes. No.
Nothing?
I don't.
Podcast, radio?
Yeah. Podcast, maybe, radio, okay. Maybe. So what's tough is whenever I'm in social environments, and I feel sorry, because our students...
Everyone's talking about Game of Thrones.
Right.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
Our students...
They're like, the winter's coming, and you're like, it's July.
Yeah. So all of those like references, I can't... And then it makes me come across as socially awkward. So like, I find middle schoolers, and we're talking about Harry Potter, and I'm like, oh, let me get in on this.
Okay, yeah.
And then the other adults are like, what is she doing? I've seen all the Harry Potter movies. I've read all of the books.
What's the best one?
All of them.
Okay, good answer.
Yeah,
good answer.
Yeah. And Thomas Barrows, our Power School director.
He's a big fan.
Yes.
Have you been to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter?
Yes.
You have, in Orlando?
Yes.
I have
pictures in front of it, and I've taken my nieces and nephews
there.
Did we
talk about this yet?
No.
So I was not a Wizarding World of, or I wasn't a Harry Potter, I wasn't a super fan.
Yeah.
And I was in Orlando for a conference, and I had a day off in between sessions, and I was like, you know, I think it opened 3 months before that, The Wizarding World of Harry Potter. This is years ago. And I was like, let me go there. I've heard good things like about it so far. And my brother was a huge fan. My mom used to read it to him when he was a little kid. And so I went, and I spent the whole day at Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And it was probably like one of the three best days of my life. It was
good.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was so magical. I really felt the magic of... And then there was one part that was wicked cool. So I thought it was called Diagon Alley, but it's Diagon Alley,
yeah.
Right? Because you can get into it diagonally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until I started reading it to my son. But diagonally. But there's Diagon Alley in The Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and people miss it. They like don't even see that it's there because you have to go through that brick wall that is hidden. And I thought that was so cool because I somehow saw it, and I got to go with some other people. And then a bunch of people missed it. Yeah. And I hope they weren't super fans, because I wasn't. And it was so fun.
Yeah. And now the other piece of why I don't watch television or read, or like, I'm getting my doctorates in educational leadership from Bay Path University. So I'm in
Longmeadow, Mass.
Yep. I'm in the midst of my coursework.
Okay. And you're going to focus, I imagine, on Harry Potter, is that?
No. My dissertation is on belonging, middle school students, their sense of belonging, and how social emotional learning could help them.
Well, that kind of is what Harry Potter's about,
and
is belonging.
And it is my job, too. So it's like, it's a perfect question.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, Nilda, is there anything important that you think I missed? What else do parents need to know about raising their kids in Longmeadow? Or what else do people need to know about you?
I think about raising your children in Longmeadow, I think we have teachers here that have stayed with the organization for 20-plus years. You don't really see that in many... you see high teacher turnover. That's not really the experience in Longmeadow.
Especially post-COVID, right?
Right. Yeah. So there are a lot of teachers that know the community really well and care about what they do. They're dedicated. I even saw teachers, so did you, over the summer, that were coming in to set up their classrooms when they should be on vacation. They care so much about their work. So that piece, I would want parents to know that. And it's a great place to work. It's a great central office team. That is constantly trying to improve. We know we're not perfect, but we're always thinking, like, how could we be better? I love that, the spirit of continuous improvement.
And, I mean, I've heard the office space that you inhabit is gorgeous and has wonderful window
light. I'm so sorry.
Nilda took my office, but I wonderfully shared it with you.
No, I did not take it. I was hired, and they said, we don't have an office for you, but we're going to...
ask
kick
very
out
nicely.
Paul McNeil, and then it'll be your office. So there was one day they took out your name and put in my name, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Gladly volunteer that space, because you're a new administrator. So there's only so many administrators in the school district. I am not one of them. I'm a really wonderful little contracted position. And so I've had this awesome office. I've just been so lucky. So when they hired you, I knew my days were numbered. But then I met you and I was like,
we can share the space.
It's a little too small for this. But you've really done a great job with the office. The walls are beautiful. You're putting up wonderful things. It's just an awesome group of people that work in central office and that serve this town, I've found. Even the people, the people at, just that work for town offices, mm-hmm. everyone from Lynn Simmons down to, the police department and the fire department, just awesome people to work with. So that's why, I started here 2017 and not eagerly looking to find other work, because it's such a good community of people that work here. And the people I work with are all the people who live here. So it's not like, I'm tied to it in these two wonderful ways, and it's been such a great place to serve. Well, thank you, Nilda. Thank you for being here and being our first guest.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have I missed anything?
No, you did a great job. Great questions.
Thanks. And we're going to try to do this show at least once a month with LCTV, and I just want to thank Longmeadow Community Television for helping support this in our first episode of Close Up. And join us down the road where we investigate and learn more about what makes Longmeadow a great place to raise kids. Thanks so much.